One of the people who reacted strongly this week to the revelations of government spying on internet and phone networks said this in the Guardian newspaper. In my estimation, there has not been in American history a more important leak than Edward Snowden's release of NSA material, and that definitely includes the Pentagon Papers 40 years ago. Snowden's whistleblowing gives us the possibility to roll back a key part of what has amounted to an executive coup against the U.S. Constitution. Those are the words of Daniel Ellsberg, the man who leaked those Pentagon Papers in 1971, who changed the course of history, became a fugitive, and then a defendant. I spoke with Ellsberg from his home in California earlier this week, where he enthusiastically compared his actions to Snowden's and Bradley Manning's, the young Army private on trial for revealing classified military information to WikiLeaks.
Like Bradley Manning, I was dealing with an ongoing war, which I felt was being continued, I think, as he did, hopelessly and at great human cost, with no prospect of any kind of success at all or any justification for the killing or the dying that Americans were doing there. I think Bradley Manning felt the same. There's a difference there from Snowden, who felt that the Constitution was being abused, that the Fourth Amendment was being violated every minute by minute and daily, and had been for some time, along with other things, and that would not change unless he took the initiative of revealing it to the public, who could act on the information.
Now, he can, of course, make whatever call he wants, and he'll face the consequences for it, as you did, referring to Edward Snowden here. But would you say that the war on terror, the idea that the U.S. needs to do something to defend itself against attacks that are out there, is fundamentally different from the battlefield war in Vietnam and the battlefield wars in Afghanistan and Iraq?
Yes, I think it was a mistake from the beginning to militarize it in the sense of calling it a war at all. What was clearly then and now essentially a police problem, an international police problem, requires the cooperation of police forces of all kinds of regimes all over the world, including, I'd have to say, some fairly unsavory ones, but also people who aren't inclined to cooperate with us. And that cooperation has been very seriously jeopardized by the militarization of the war in terms of drones, as in Pakistan and elsewhere. I think that's lowered our security. The examples that have been given just in the last week of supposed successes in this effort against terror turn out on closer examination to have been, in every case, almost due to police work and international police work, leads from the British police and otherwise, and not from indiscriminate listening to ordinary Americans, every ordinary American.
Do you think that technology has changed the game at all in the sense that this data does exist? It's not in a box somewhere. Part of the nature of the data itself is that someone is always looking at it.
Right. The temptation, in other words, is always there to gather that information and to abuse it in the sense, from a governmental point of view, in the sense of using it in all kinds of purposes, data on every journalist, on every source, on every congressperson has an obvious, frankly, it's not a potential for abuse. It is an abuse. And the same is true for all ordinary Americans. The potential there for blackmailing them into being informants, as was done in the East German so-called Democratic Republic, the Stasi, the secret police there, as shown in the movie The Lives of Others, which I would like to see reissued right now, got the Oscar a few years ago for Best Foreign Film, shows that having that kind of knowledge of the private lives of every individual gives the state the ability to manipulate them, to threaten them, to promise them in ways that can turn them into a nation of informants, which, as Snowden has said, is not the kind of world he wants to live in, not the country he wants to live in. And I agree with him on that.
Now, Snowden has given no evidence that the U.S. has actually gone ahead and done that. I'm wondering if there's a fundamental difference between the kinds of surveillance that the Stasi did, and that they actually installed devices into people's homes and offices. In your case, devices were installed in your home and your psychiatrist's office during the Nixon administration when you were bugged. Is there a fundamental difference between doing something like that, which is a clear violation of property and you know your home and private places versus simply taking a look at data that exists in this digital realm that involves no specific wiretap or any sort of affirmative action to listen in.
So why was the cooperation of these places like Google on the one hand and Verizon on the other so secret? Why was it such a secret that since it's so commonplace and ordinary and to be taken for granted, as the president and Dianne Feinstein now says, why was it a problem to reveal it? It's so ordinary. It's so obvious. I think that's ridiculous. And as Mark Udall and Ron Wyden have been saying now for some years, especially a year ago, they believed the public would be stunned to realize the breadth of this collection. And you're saying they shouldn't have been. Well, maybe they shouldn't have been, but there is a debate now. And the president says he welcomes the debate. Not enough, apparently, to have initiated it. But in fact, the debate that is going on now in Congress about these matters, or there are about a dozen ways in which investigations are now getting started, would simply not have happened without Edward Snowden's revelation. So I think we owe him a very considerable debt of gratitude.
Well, you make a great point on this idea that if it's so ubiquitous, the availability of this data, why was it made secret? It seems as though there are indications that Google and some of the other companies that were involved here want to get out from under that secrecy precisely for that point.
Well, they felt compelled, apparently, and it's profitable for them in their relations with the government in general. I think the investigations will show how sincere they are in their concern about it. We'll find out. Certainly, official statements give us no information whatever. As you know, the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, was asked by Senator Wyden in this March in Senate hearings, do you collect information of any kind at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans? Clapper informed the public and the senator, no. Now, he's later described that, when Snowden's documents show the contrary, as the least untruthful statement he could have made. Well, a less untruthful statement would have been yes. That's sort of the long answer. No is the short answer. And he was not prepared to tell us that, despite the fact that it was also legal and so necessary. So apparently he was worried that the public would not find it quite as reasonable as he does, and that seems to be the case.
Daniel Ellsberg, former U.S. military analyst who in 1971 leaked the Pentagon Papers, which revealed how the U.S. public had been misled about the Vietnam War. Daniel Ellsberg, thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.